Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
I'm Jan Black.
And I'm Laura Owens. And I think we can all relate to the idea of putting something off to the last minute. We're really excited to be talking to our next guest about this. Tim Pitchell is one of the world's leading experts in procrastination. He's the author of The Procrastination Puzzle and a contributor to publications like Fortune, Psychology Today, and The Washington Post. He's director of the Center for Initiatives in Education and is a faculty member in the Department of Psychology at Carleton University. He also hosts the very popular podcast, I Procrastinate. Welcome to the show, Tim.
Thanks very much.
Thank you so much for joining us. How do you define procrastination?
Well, procrastination is a nasty form of delay because although all procrastination is delay, not all delay is procrastination. And with that in mind, procrastination is a voluntary delay of an intended act, despite the recognition you're probably going to be worse off for this delay. So you become your own worst enemy. And that's really important to understand that there's no upside to procrastination. You and I have to delay things all the time. We put this call off, for example, from last night to today. But it wasn't procrastination. It was purposeful delay. It was sagacious, knowledgeable delay. Mm-hmm. And other times there can be inevitable delay. If my children were sick right now, I might have to delay our conversation again, but it wouldn't be procrastination. So procrastination is a voluntary delay of an intended act. You think you should be working now, but you're not. And you think, this isn't a good idea. All of that comes together to make procrastination.
And it's voluntary, but it has a lot to do with willpower. Can you explain that?
Well, it does and it doesn't. You're right. It has everything to do with voluntariness in the sense that we're putting it off, but lots of people don't feel that way. And in a sense, it could be the exertion of self-control, where you'd say, or willpower, as you put it, that, you know, I just have to haul off and do it. But that's not so easy. I mean, there's some very recent research to show that we're much better off to get away from temptations that distract us from our goals, because those really wear us out. And it's very difficult to keep exerting willpower. In fact, we seem to have very limited resources for that. So as much as we can exert self-control, we're much better to set up the environment in such a way that we don't get tempted in the first place.
One of the temptations I find in terms of procrastination is the internet. I will go online with the intention of looking something up, and that's all I'm going to do. And then I turn the computer on and there's Facebook or there's a news story. And all of a sudden I'm distracted and put off for a long time, maybe half an hour or whatever I went to the computer to look up in the first place.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, that's the big joke, isn't it? That we don't know why 3 hours later we're looking at kitten videos.
Exactly.
And I was just looking at a little dog eating pizza a half an hour ago, the same thing, right? And I thought, what am I doing? Well,
really?
we make rational decisions over irrationally short periods of time. So we get in front of our computer and say, it will only take me a minute to check my Facebook feed or Instagram or whatever, Snapchat, whatever your favorite social media is. And that's true. It'll only take a minute. But a minute later, you face the same choice. And now once you've made that choice, it licenses a further choice more easily. And so that what's irrational about it is over an irrationally short period of time. So in a sense, we want to trick ourselves. It's all part of the self-deception of procrastination. I don't want to admit that I'm going to go waste time here. So I say, it'll only take me a minute. In fact, that's one of my personal sayings, that if I find myself thinking it will only take a minute, then I know I'm on the slippery slope of procrastination. And that can be true around the farm too. Like, I get up in the morning, I have some horses to care for and some dogs, but I might have a task that's awaiting me at my desk that I'm not too enamored with. And so, it'll only take me a minute to maybe change that in the tractor. It'll only take me a minute. I think, Tim, if you're thinking that way, you're trying to get out of some other work. So I think everyone could think about that. The moment you start saying it'll only take a minute, you're often trying to make an excuse to move away from some more important task.
And I'm wondering what the science is behind procrastination and or recent studies that have been done on procrastination with the internet and smartphones. Do you think that in the past, before these things were around, that people procrastinated quite as much?
No, I don't have hard data on that. Some of my colleagues seem to be making some noise around the fact that it's increasing, but it's a hard thing to judge. But I think most of us know that what's happened is we've got distractions in the palm of our hand. And as much as sometimes we had distractions in the past, we get bored with them because they just weren't endless. And these devices are endless. You can keep changing apps, or you can change where you're, what you're looking at. And so I do think that we are, as Neil Postman said, amusing ourselves to death. And it really is we're driving ourselves to distraction that way. So I absolutely believe that, but I think that hard data is hard to pin down. But I don't know a single person that doesn't lament how much time we waste with these apps. And of course, they're meant to be sticky. That's the other side of it, is that people are trying to keep us there.
Is a tendency to procrastinate something we inherit from our parents?
Yeah, all our major traits are heritable. So if you think about the five major personality traits, and you can remember them with the word canoe: conscientiousness, agreeableness, neuroticism, openness to experience, and extroversion. So those are kind of the building blocks or the primary colors of personality. And all of those show heritabilities of about 50%. Because remember, it's always nature and nurture. And some people would even say it's nature via nurture. They're always dancing together. So our major personality traits are heritable. Procrastination has been shown in some genetic studies to be highly related to conscientiousness and highly related to impulsivity. So there's no doubt that there's a genetic component. But biology is not destiny. So as much as everything's heritable, or many things are heritable, I have to be careful there, many things are heritable, particularly around personality, it's not destiny, and that all of us can choose to act out of character, even if it seems to be our character. We can learn to act out of character if it's in our best interest.
How did you personally decide to make procrastination and teaching people about it your mission? Were you a big procrastinator yourself?
Oh, like every other student I know. But that's not what drove me to it. Often people say that about psychologists, don't they? That, oh, we all study what's wrong with us. But no, in fact, I was doing my doctoral dissertation on people's goal pursuits, known as personal projects or personal strivings. But I was actually looking at people's personal projects and looking at how it predicted their well-being. So I looked at personality and what people were doing in their lives. And I did a qualitative study along with a quantitative study. And that means I talked to people, which is good for psychologists to do. The qualitative part was listening and writing things down. And the stories people told me that really affected their well-being was when they said they were going to do things and didn't. And they labeled it very quickly as procrastination. And so I can remember at my doctoral defense, my external examiner after the defense said, "So Tim, what's next?" And I said, "I'm going to stop studying what people are doing and start studying what they say they're going to do and don't ever do, because I know that really affects their well-being." And I've spent 20 plus years doing that, because it really does drag us down. It's that self-defeating downward spiral that we've all experienced. It's related to depression. It's certainly related to all sorts of negative health effects. So that's what got me interested in it. And then because we become our own worst enemy, that keeps me fascinated. Like, how can we do this to ourselves? Time is the only limited resource I know that we have, and we end up wasting it.
Tell us more about that, about how procrastination impacts us negatively.
Well, procrastination, I think when you asked me to define procrastination, I want to lay something on top of that before I answer this question, and that procrastination is not a time management problem. You know, this notion of nobody told me, part of your podcast.
Yeah.
I think nobody told you that procrastination is not a time management problem. It's an emotion regulation problem. Procrastination at heart is very simple. You have a task. So many of us are good at time management. I'm sitting in front of my calendar right now, and I can look that tomorrow at 1:45, I'm supposed to read Rachel's thesis draft. Now, 1:45 can come along and I go, "Oh, I just do not want to do that. I don't want to. I don't feel like it." And then I add, "I'll feel more like it tomorrow." Well, that's the recipe right there. It's all about feeling. And what I have to be able to do is manage my emotions, because my time is managed. I said, Rachel's thesis draft, this draft is her second or third draft. It's only going to take me about an hour and a half, but I don't feel like it. And we have a desire to feel good now. So we give in to that desire. So it's an emotion regulation thing. And so that is at its heart. Now, what we found in our research, that procrastination leads to stress, and stress undermines our immune system. I mean, there's lots and lots of research on what stress does to our bodies. So that's one direct effect. But the indirect effects of procrastination on health are that we practice fewer wellness behaviors. So if we can put off our work, we can also put off exercise, eating well, sleeping. In fact, there's a whole new area of procrastination research on sleep procrastination.
That was interesting. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure, we put off going to bed. I mean, it's very much related to what you talked about with technology. So people don't make their clear intention to go to bed, or even when they do, they've settled down in front of Netflix, and it's the only time they get for themselves in the day. And then it's much like the email thing. Well, one more episode. And of course, it goes on and on, and pretty soon we're not going to bed. And so it has detrimental effects on your health, of course. So sleep procrastination is an interesting one, because sleep hygiene is one of the most important things we could change to be healthier. But the other effect of procrastination on health is the indirect effects of treatment delay as well. So not only can we put off wellness behaviors, but we can say, oh, yeah, I should get that looked after maybe later, mañana.
Right.
And of course, that comes up to bite us, too. So procrastination has that three-pronged effect on our health. There's the direct effects of stress, but there's the indirect effects of fewer wellness behaviors and more treatment delay.
You have this podcast that talked about how procrastination makes you depressed and depression makes you procrastinate. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, yeah, I kind of mentioned that when I talked about that downward spiral. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of interesting, though, when you talk about depression. Albert Mealy, a philosopher at Florida State, who writes a lot about weakness of will and lots about volition, a lot of important topics related to this psychological research, even though he's a philosopher. And he's written things like, only the non-depressed agent can be guilty of weakness of will. So depression is separate from procrastination. And when we're depressed, things can get delayed. And I don't think I'd call it procrastination. In fact, about a year and a half ago now, my father died. And after that, things came off the rail for me because his final illness came suddenly and he died and I was depressed. But I never criticized myself for procrastination. I understood that my delay was due to my mental health at the moment. And so depression can be related to delay in our lives, but we have to be careful not to then also beat ourselves up and call ourselves procrastinators. That delay can be the amotivation of depression. Now, the other thing is true, though, as well. So we start to procrastinate a great deal, and we get behind, and now we're really getting into trouble because things aren't getting done, whether that be at work or at school or at home. And then we start feeling badly about ourselves and we ruminate, and that kind of rumination can lead to depression and depressive cognition. So yeah, that is a route to being depressed because it drags us down. And really the only solution then is to find some way to break that cycle. But they're certainly related and they go both directions. But when we have depression, I don't like to talk about procrastination. Let's treat the depression.
On the other side of the coin, how can procrastination impact us positively?
How can procrastination impact us positively?
Right. Maybe if we take a little bit of time or we put something off and it may have a positive impact.
Well, every once in a while in our lives it does, and we hold on to that like gold because we want to then justify later procrastination that's really harmful. At the outset, I said procrastination is the bad form of delay, and then I'd add to that, to answer this question, there isn't an upside. Lots of times delay is important. In the creative process, there's times when you need to delay an incubator, think more, or research more. And some people call that procrastination, but they're not recognizing is no, they need to do other kinds of work. That we have to be very careful there, that there's even been terms like active procrastination, which I call an oxymoron. And we've done research recently. Our most recent paper that was just published this month, in fact, was about the fact that active procrastination is purposeful delay. It's not procrastination at all. It's not a self-regulation failure. It's not me giving in to feel good. It's that I say, I'm going to do this later. And because I know I can pull it off later and I don't feel like doing it now. And so that's different than procrastination where you think I really need to be working on this now, but I don't feel like it. And then I'm going to give in to that. And so that's really an important distinction. I want to say again, there really isn't an upside to procrastination, but in our lives, there are times when we procrastinate and something works out and we just hold on to that like gold.
I'm really, really curious to know what your thoughts are on ADD or ADHD drugs like Adderall, because I know amongst my friends, you'll have people that never used these kinds of drugs until a big paper is due or until they have a big test and they really need to study. Do you think this kind of drug is useful, or are you not a proponent?
Wow, that's a great question. You have to talk to me in about two or three more months. We have a very large study going on right now with ADHD and procrastination. I have a student who's had lifelong ADHD, and so he's been able to recruit quite a large sample of people who have been diagnosed formally with ADHD. The few studies that are available so far, there hasn't been this formal diagnosis. They haven't had the cooperation of clinicians, and we have that now. So I would tell you that, yes, I do think that you're going to see more delay in a population of ADHD people or people who suffer from ADHD, because at its heart there, we've got executive function problems, that part of the brain that's responsible for organization and impulse control and those sorts of issues, planfulness. And when that's not working well, of course, then you can find procrastination. And in one study by Laura Rabin at the City University of New York, she did show that every subscale on a measure of executive function correlated with procrastination, but negatively. The lower the executive function, the higher the procrastination. So to the extent these drugs do help with executive function and treat ADHD, then they might kickstart work when you weren't able to before.
Tim, are most of us aware of the degree to which procrastination is impacting our life and the ability for us to move forward?
The first part, yes. I believe that everyone who procrastinates gets it. In fact, I have a colleague at Utrecht University, the same group that was studying sleep procrastination. He defines procrastination as culpably unwarranted delay. And he says we're culpable. That's another philosopher. I like their language use. It's so tight. And I love that definition because it's short and it gets to the heart of it. It's the form of delay for which we feel culpable. We know we're really being our own worst enemy. Now, do we feel that notion that we could change? Many of us don't hold that optimism, and we don't even know how. Well, you asked me before, did I study this because I was a procrastinator? Yeah, I procrastinated a fair bit like lots of people. I don't anymore. But it's not because I've somehow changed and don't have a desire to put things off. It's that I've learned strategies not to, and that really fuels me in important ways, in both my goal attainment, but also my well-being. And I don't know if I'm ever going to change internally and kind of go, yeah, rah, rah, I'm happy I'm doing this. But I do get things done. And so I don't think everyone gets that last part, that there are strategies that I can use to overcome this constant needless delay.
If you just had a minute or 2 minutes to get out, to get to the world, get your message out about what your greatest strategies are for preventing procrastination, what are they?
Well, I do have one that I use constantly, and it's that I told you that procrastination is all about emotion management. So I face a task and I don't feel like it. I don't want to. Our brains are meant to do one thing, a couple things really well, think and feel. And we have very busy brains. Imagine that one of these major tech companies like Google or Apple, or you pick one, could come up with a bubble that would appear above your head. And in it, all your thoughts and feelings would be visible to others. And your only choice was that you could leave it on or shut it off. I can guarantee most of us would shut it off because you think, I don't want you to know how crazy I am.
Because if
you reflect on how many thoughts and feelings we have, even in the course of this conversation, we've thought and felt things that weren't even related to this conversation. Our brains are great at that. So we have to recognize that just because I have thoughts and feelings, I don't have to take them all so seriously. In fact, the Buddhists call this monkey mind. Our minds are just jumping around like a monkey. And so we have to give the monkey something to do. And you just can't tell the monkey, don't do that. In fact, the research on emotion regulation by James Gross and others will tell us you can't suppress these things. It's just not an effective strategy. And the Buddhists say the same thing. But you got to give the monkey something to do. And so my number one strategy is, yeah, when I face a task that I don't feel like doing, which is all the time, okay, because I don't know where adults get this, but we somehow think our motivational state has to match the task at hand. It doesn't. It really doesn't.
We don't have to be excited and with everything that we do.
No. In fact, if we wait for that, we're not going to do very much. Uh-huh. So here it is. So I've got the backdrop there. It's about emotion regulation. I'm having all these emotions. Sure, my brain's great at it. My brain's great at thinking and feeling. I'm thinking I'm overwhelmed. I'm feeling horrible. And then I just say, well, what's the next action? If I was going to do this, but I don't want to, what would be the next action? And I keep that action tiny. So it's a kind of like that, you know, small step thing. But I don't try to even put it in that phrase. I say, what's the next action I would do? And it can be so tiny as, well, I'd have to open my laptop, or I'd have to open the mail application and look at that mail that was sent to me. And I think to myself, I can do that. But if I think about the whole task, again, I get overwhelmed. And I just have to line up a few of those, and I'm fine. I'm 62 years old now, and I work on the 15th floor of a building on campus and an 8th floor of another. And it's been for the last few years, I decided I should take the stairs. It's just good exercise. There's not a single day that I walk on campus where I think, oh, I'm looking forward to taking the stairs.
Right.
Oh, I feel you on that. I feel the same way with my stairs in my building. I always call the elevator, but then I'm like, man, but I should take the stairs. And I end up doing it, but I don't want to.
Right. That sums it up. So on the way, though, my brain is saying, you know, your bag's awfully heavy today. You didn't sleep that well. You know, you haven't really been feeling that way. Maybe you should take just the elevator just today. You're looking for that license. Mm-hmm. And I say to myself, Tim, if you can't hack it, you can get off at the next floor and take the elevator. And I do the first step. And of course, 15 flights later, I feel great. And that strategy of what's the next action is the same. What's that next tiny step? And that is life-changing, because in the sense that it helps you not try to suppress your emotional state. You don't fight with it. I don't feel like it. I don't want to. I'm afraid. I'm bored. I'm frustrated. I'm resentful. There's so many flavors of these negative emotions. Instead, I put my focus on what's the next action. And once you make a little bit of progress, it fuels our well-being and our motivation. Now, it's not magical in the sense that you might have to do that 15 minutes later. You know, it doesn't change you as a person necessarily, but it changes your outcome. And over time, you can develop habits. As much as I'm being really cautious by saying it won't change you, well, to the extent you develop habits, that's really life-changing. Because really, our habits are things that will protect us.
How do you feel about the notion that procrastination for some people gives an excuse for perhaps not doing the best that they could do, or not succeeding as well as they could? Like, oh, well, I would have gotten a better grade on that test if I'd studied more, but, you know.
Yes. Well, there's two things there, both of them research-driven. One, the first case is called self-handicapping. So certainly we can use delay to build an excuse to protect our self-esteem. Professor Ferrari, Joe Ferrari, a good friend of mine at DePaul University in Chicago, has talked a lot about the fact that people who procrastinate don't like feedback about the self. They're always trying to protect self-concept. And so a way to protect your self-concept, as you've said, you know, well, I could have done better, but I only started studying last night. Now, some of us, my colleagues and I, don't think that that's necessarily procrastination. That's strategic delay in a certain way. But it can be a secondary gain of procrastination. So you put things off, you do things at the last minute, at the same time you're protecting yourself. Now, another colleague, Fuchsia Sirwa at Sheffield University, University of Sheffield in Great Britain, she did some research on upward and downward counterfactuals. And you made one. An upward counterfactual is the what if, and you think about how you could have done it better. And a downward counterfactual is, well, let's say you had a fender bender today, a car accident. You say, well, at least no one was killed. Or as opposed to, if I hadn't been looking at my phone, I wouldn't have hit anyone. So upward counterfactual is the second one, and the downward counterfactual is the first, at least no one was killed. Well, we found that people who procrastinate more make more downward counterfactuals. This is what Fuchsia Sirwa found. And the reason they get is emotions, because it makes you feel better. When you say things like, well, at least no one was killed, you feel better, but you don't learn anything. So all of that's wrapped in there. Certainly procrastination and upward and downward counterfactuals and self-handicapping all relate to issues of self. And we have to transcend then if we're going to keep moving forward.
Why is it that perfectionists are more likely to procrastinate?
Ah, well, I have to stop you there, and because you painted all the perfectionists with one brush. And there are at least two flavors. The most recent literature talks about perfectionistic strivings versus perfectionistic concerns. And perfectionistic strivings are not related to procrastination. In fact, they can be negatively related to procrastination. Like you, the more you have perfectionistic strivings, the less you procrastinate. But perfectionistic concerns are related to living up to the unrealistic expectations of others. This inner dialogue that involves rumination and really beating yourself up, that is related to procrastination. In fact, an earlier typology of perfectionism had self-oriented perfectionism, which is like the strivings, you're just doing it well for yourself, and then socially prescribed perfectionism, where again, you're trying to live up to others, that social prescription part. And sure enough, that's the kind of perfectionism that's related to procrastination. So if you find yourself having this internal dialogue with some imaginary other, or some other that you know, like a parent or a spouse or a boss, and you're feeling, oh, I can't live up to those expectations. Well, your perfectionism is getting in the way, and it's a big deal. But just because you're a perfectionist doesn't mean you're going to procrastinate. It depends what flavor.
Do we get better at dealing with procrastination as we get older, or do we get worse?
That's interesting. There's not enough research to be definitive about this. There's some research that shows that we procrastinate less. And it doesn't surprise me in some respects, because when you look at the changes in personality over time, one mean level change we see in the population, that means it happens to most people as we age on average, is that we become more conscientious and less neurotic. And so those traits are both related to procrastination in a way that as we become more conscientious and less neurotic, we procrastinate less. But then now I've been working a lot with older people, and they'll tell me after they're retired, oh, I'm such a procrastinator now. I used to have structure in my life, and now I think, well, maybe tomorrow. So I'm not convinced we have enough data to really speak about that definitively. But again, the research that's out there shows that it seems to decrease over time. But then anecdotally, I've heard people say, no, I find myself procrastinating more now that I've lacked structure.
You became a father later in life, and I'm wondering, what are you trying to teach your child as to how to not procrastinate?
That's a great question. You've done your research. My daughter, I was writing a blog piece for Psychology Today, in fact, when my children came home off the bus, and I was at the school today with my children. I'm on an 80% appointment so that I can be home more and be Mr. Mom, as people like to call it. And so I had to work a bit later, and I said to my daughter, well, you've got some homework, why don't you get on it? And she had a full-fledged hissy fit. I don't want to, I don't feel like it. And I said, do you know who you're talking to? I don't want to, I don't feel like it. And she was really, like, she was really using that as a defense. She really just wanted to become so obnoxious, I'd give up. And I said to her, you know, what you're trying to do is push me away. I said, not going to work. And I said, and I know you don't feel like it, but we're going to get started on it. Let's just take the first question and you just show me what it is. And we talk about what we would do if we were going to do it. See how I set that threshold really low? Mm-hmm. And sure enough, over the next half hour, she did two or three of those questions. Now, I didn't make her do them all. I'm looking for those little wins, trying to show her how she can set those standards. Now, my son, who's only, she's 12 and a half. My son's 10. But when my son was six, I remember saying to him, Alex, it's time you learned to make your bed. Time that you made your bed every morning. And of course, he said to me, I don't want to. I don't feel like it. And I knew I wasn't going to really win a fight with a six-year-old. So I said, Alex, how'd you like to get a dollar? He said, you'll pay me a dollar to make my bed? I said, no. I'll give you a dollar if you can count to 10 before I can make your bed. He said, really? I said, yeah, but you got to count 1,001, 1,002. Now, my son has a single bed with a sheet, a duvet, and a pillow. So he starts to count, and I pull the sheet up, and I straighten the pillow, and I pull his duvet up, and he gets to six. I said, I'm done. He said, I don't get my dollar, do I? I said, no, but what did you learn? It takes 6 seconds to make my bed. Exactly. And I said, but you're going to argue with me for like an hour. And now every day is beds made. Now, I'm working on neatness, but he learned, and this is so true about many things in life, that we make more of it in our own minds than it is.
Yeah.
There's not a day in the, I get up in the morning, so we've had our dinner and we've washed our dishes, and some of them are in the dishwasher, but some of the larger things are in a dish rack drying. And in the morning, my job is to get up and make some coffee and put those away. It's not a morning I feel like doing that, right? And a part of me goes, oh, why do I have to do this? You know, woe is me. And yet really, it takes 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. 2 minutes to put, and that doesn't even when the counter is full, you think it's going to take half an hour. It takes a couple of minutes, and we can spend our lives not doing those things. And over a few days, when you don't, then your life's really out of control, and you feel it. Like you feel the weight of that, and so it's really important to stay on top of things. Now, all of that is by way of answer to your question about how do I deal with my own children this way. Well, we develop a language to talk about this. This, I don't feel like it, I don't want to. We have a language around, Mark Twain was once known to have said, if your job is to eat a frog, then eat it first thing in the morning. And if your job is to eat two frogs, then eat the biggest one first. And so we have the expression of, you know, what's your frog today? You know, so we develop a language. I just gave a talk at a high school in Toronto yesterday. And as the social worker who invited me to the school said, to name it is to tame it. So with my children, I try to find a way that we can talk about these things, to lay them bare and not be able to just use techniques to avoid, you know, because my daughter even says, I'll feel more like it tomorrow. I want to do it tomorrow. No, you don't. You just don't want to do it now.
Yeah.
And then there's a whole story behind why we think we're going to feel like it tomorrow. But I'll stay on your question and say, on the one hand, I try to develop a language with my children. On the other hand, I try to model it. Right? I just try to show them that good habits take you a long, long way.
Our show is called Nobody Told Me, and we always like to ask our guests, what is your Nobody Told Me lesson in life? What have you learned in studying procrastination, in dealing with it in your own life, that no one could have told you about?
That no one could have told me about.
Wow. Or that no one did tell you about. Or that you wish someone had told you about.
Well, I think what I wish someone would have told me about was to live my own life earlier, that we are deeply all different. And I think many of the humanist psychologists speak to this, and artists say you got to find your own calling. But it's true for every human being. You know, the positive psychologists now have kind of rebirthed humanism and have told us, you know, we have to become our own person. And I think that if anyone could have helped me see that earlier in life, I had so many moments where I recognized my own potential, but then felt, as my daughter once said to me when she was going to wear some clothing I objected to, she said, Dad, but I have to fit in. And I think if I could have learned earlier in life that, no, you don't have to fit in. And in fact, you're going to be regarded more highly by others and be even more valuable in the world if you just become your own person. That's just a huge gift. But it's not something you can really give to someone. It's something you can help them see. Like, it's helping people develop perspective.
And that takes time.
It does. And it's got developmental roots as well. But I'll tell you, when my grandmother on my father's side died, she was the first relative that I lost. And I loved her a lot, as we all love our family. And I remember walking, I was probably my son's age, I was pretty young. I remember walking out of the hospital room thinking, she's the only one leaving. Like, we all get to go back to our lives. Mm-hmm. And it was a deeply existential moment of, yeah, this is life, right? People check out, you're going to check out, and that person's the only one leaving. You know, mm-hmm. as much as you love them, yeah, can't take their place. And that's a pretty deep one too. And you wonder, how does that relate to procrastination? Well, I mentioned it in passing earlier. There's only one non-renewable resource we have in life, and that's time. And we shouldn't waste it, because we don't even know how much we're going to get. And I think that's why in every world religion, there's a notion of the sin of sloth, wasting this precious gift of time. And whether you're religious or not, doesn't matter. It's still an existential reality. You don't have to believe it's on a commandment or part of a religious doctrine to know that, yeah, this is going to run out. Now, do I want to waste it? And why am I wasting it? And for me, that's a big eye-opener too.
Tim, how can people find out more about you?
Well, they could do what you did. You did a good job. I have a website. I established it back in 1995, just after I defended my own doctoral dissertation, when I decided that procrastination was going to be something I wanted to study. And I got that domain name back then, procrastination.ca. Universities in Canada aren't .edu, but we're .ca. So you got to think, yeah, that guy's in Canada, .ca, procrastination.ca. And there you can see the kind of things I've written and get some idea that behind the philosophy, behind our research group and my own teaching. And then as there's access to what you talked about earlier, the blog, which I've been returning to, and the podcast, which is intermittent, but there, because what I've found is I started my podcast back in 2006, 2005. And since then, so many people are doing podcasts that I've been guests on podcasts rather than doing my own. So there's stuff all out there. But you can, you know, when you get procrastination.ca, you'll find Tim.
Okay, sounds good. And then also at psychologytoday.com, that's where a lot of your blogs are.
That's right. But the link to the Psychology Today blogs is right on procrastination.ca as well.
Okay. And you also have this fantastic YouTube video. You have a lot, but there's one that's had, I think it was 420,000 views as of yesterday. And it's fantastic. It's fantastic. I actually was able to listen through and not do a ton of other things. I won't say I didn't get distracted once or twice, but for me, well, I thought that was pretty good. So
I didn't film that with the idea that it was going anywhere. I was asked by our educational development center on campus if I'd come and talk to the teaching assistants about dealing with students who procrastinate. And I give talks constantly. So I said, sure. And I went out over one afternoon at lunchtime and talked for an hour. And then as people do, they put it up on the internet and it's gotten a lot of play. And now I want to do some others because I see that YouTube is a more popular place for people to be than ever, because there's many things in there that I expand on now. In fact, we didn't even touch on the idea of present and future self, which is huge in procrastination. That's another name it attainment. You know, how's future self going to feel about this? But anyhow, thank you for the compliment on the YouTube video. I'm sure it's there if people want to watch it.
Well, thank you so much for joining us.
There are so many other things we would like to talk to you about in the future, so we hope you will definitely come back.
Oh, Jan and Laura, it would be my pleasure.
Well, it was our pleasure to talk with you today. That's Dr. Timothy Pitchell. He's the author of Solving the Procrastination Puzzle, A Concise Guide to Strategies for Change. I'm Jan Black.
And I'm Laura Owens.
And you've been listening to Nobody Told Me. Thank you for joining us.